With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hello and welcome to a bonus episode of Cinematic Universe, a podcast that's all about comic book movies, which you can find at cinematicmultiverse.com. I'm Joe Cunningham, and joining me to help make sense of the comics behind the movies are...
James Hunt.
And Caroline Sita.
So we're delighted to have Caroline back with us again for another Netflix show. I think the last time you were with us was Jessica Jones.
Yeah, that's become my my little corner of the MCU is the Netflix corner.
Because you binge-watched all of this, right, for your AV club?
Yeah, with both this and Jessica Jones, I watched them all in, like, a 3 to 4 day period and write all 13 reviews. So I watched this and I analyzed it. I can't promise how much I, like, really remember it. It's all kind of a blur.
I went back and listened to Empire Magazine's spoiler special of this.
Oh, smart.
Which is a very good podcast, but it was just good for, like, reminding me of, like, they would say something and I'd go, like, do I agree or disagree with that? I think I disagree with that. Okay, that's interesting. Or I agree with that thing. But it's a very good podcast, and it reminded me of a lot of stuff. I was just going to say, though, your AV Club articles, which I read as I went along, slightly easier in a 3 to 4 day span watching an episode and then reading a review than watching and then writing one. But also, I mean, I remember I was on Twitter and you were getting tweeted by Patton Oswalt, who was enjoying your...
Yeah, that was very surreal. I don't know how that sort of came about. But yeah, he was very kind and said he was reading them. And yeah, that was a very... Honestly, the whole weekend was so strange anyway, because I'm living in this weird schedule where I'm just constantly watching this show and then things are happening on Twitter. And again, all a blur. Like, mostly a good blur, but very confusing.
Well, that might be a good point to dive into the show. So this is our... We're going to be spoiler-filled from the very start of this discussion. So if you haven't watched the show yet, although you've had plenty of time, so I'm assuming you have done by now, jump out and jump back in whenever you've watched it. Because I think there probably are more spoilers that we can get to. We did Agent Carter as our last bonus episode, and really I didn't feel like there was that much of that show we could spoil. But there's a whole bunch in here because there are mysteries and Marvel-y things going on here, there, and everywhere. And I think it probably makes sense to split this show up into three parts, because the 13 episodes kind of split into three parts as well. We have the Punisher arc in the first four episodes, then Elektra in the next four, and then the final five are kind of... They revolve around the Hand, but also have the Elektra stuff and the Punisher stuff kind of coming to an unsatisfactory climax in the background as well. But let's start off with Punisher. What did you guys think of the character and of that kind of mini arc that began the show?
The first four episodes are the ones that I wish I could sort of go back and review again, because I was pretty... I mean, I liked things about the first four episodes, but I think I was a little harsh on them, mostly because I kind of didn't trust the show to do anything interesting with the Punisher, because I think he's a sort of, like... He's a very familiar archetype, of this sort of man, like murderous man motivated by the death of his family to go out and kill people. And so I was like, this show's not, I just don't believe that this show is going to do anything interesting with him. Those first four episodes didn't fully convince me they were doing anything interesting. But as the season went on, I thought he got more and more interesting. And in retrospect, I wish I could go back and like, maybe there were little threads there that I didn't pick up on. So yeah, I think in retrospect, I probably liked these first four episodes or maybe like episodes 2, 3, and 4, the best. But I think at the time I didn't quite appreciate that.
When you get to the end of the fourth episode, I remember at the time thinking, huh, I wonder, because the fourth episode, Tony Curran comes in and you expect him to be kind of maybe the big bad of the season going forward. He comes in and he takes down the Punisher and he captures him and starts torturing him. Except by the end of the episode, the Punisher has killed him, shotgunned him directly in the face, and has been arrested. And I almost wondered at the end of that I wonder if we'll actually see any more of Punisher, or whether that was just kind of like a, hey, here's an interesting ideological counterpoint to our hero, there's his story, and we'll bring him back in a future season, or in his, as we now know, in his own show. But he stuck around, and I kind of wonder, I agree with you that I think as a character he comes more into focus when he's not just having to go around shooting people and monologuing at Daredevil. but really the bulk of his arc, his plot, is done right there and then, because the stuff that comes after I felt really didn't weave itself properly into the season. The stuff with him meeting Fisk in jail, I mean, I loved meeting Fisk again, but it didn't really make sense to me, that relationship and how that relationship ended, and the whole stuff about what was the MacGuffin? It had a ridiculous name, didn't it?
The blacksmith.
There we go. Black Sky and the blacksmith. Two things that don't make any sense and are never explained. so yeah, I wasn't as impressed with all of that stuff. James, you like the Punisher on the page, right? Or you've liked stuff from the Punisher on the page. Was John Pertenfold a satisfactory Frank Castle?
I mean, the thing that struck me immediately was that he's a lot younger than the Frank Castle of the comics. Like, because obviously he's a sort of Vietnam veteran in there and pushing his 40s pretty much all the time. And this guy's like, I don't know about you guys, I got the sense he was sort of late 20s, maybe.
I'd have put him like late 30s, probably. I don't know how old John Bernthal is. But yeah, James, you thought Kristen Ritter was about 19, didn't you, before Jessica Jones?
Famously bad at that. But yeah, even so, I get the impression that he's a kind of younger Punisher than the comics version. Certainly a lot more emotional as well. Like, he's not recognisably the Punisher from the comics, but at the same time, I think it's a good version of that character, sort of a more modern version.
What did you think about in those first four episodes, the interplay with Daredevil? Is that what you wanted to see from those two characters? Is that basically what you can do with those two characters when you put them together?
Yeah, I mean, that's that rooftop episode especially, where they're just sort of hammering out their respective ideologies, that's the kind of superhero crap I live for. That's why I love X-Men comics, because it's mostly just people standing around having philosophical discussions and then a fight. And like, so anytime the TV series can get like really deep into that stuff, like, yeah, that's where I live.
And in regards to all that ideological stuff, and I'm going to skip right to the end of the series here, but after that big fight that we get on the rooftop where Punisher shows up to shoot some people because we've got to find a way to involve him in the ending, but does Matt try and kill Nobu? Is he aware that that's what he's doing, or does he know that he's kind of immortal and he won't die, or...
Personally, I thought he attacked him safe in the knowledge that he would come back, because it already happened once. Like, the fact that Stick intervened, you know, changed that, but my impression was that he didn't cross the line.
But do you think he thinks he crossed the line? Because if Nobu is dead and you threw him off a building, you know?
I mean, I don't think he does, but at the same time, he was willing to let Frank kill the blacksmith, so, you know, he's skirting the line. I'm not sure he's actively crossed it.
I found it a really weird thing to leave ambiguous. Like, I think I would buy either choice that he purposely killed him, like, I thought he was at that point, or that he kept to his, like, rule, but to not address it at all, like, that, when your whole season pretty much revolves around, is it morally right to kill someone? And you get that in The Punisher and also in Elektra and, like, even a little bit with Karen. To leave it ambiguous whether or not, like, Matt has crossed that line is so bizarre to me. And it's even weirder because I feel like they did this last year with Nobu, too, when we, like, first thought he died. It was very ambiguous to me if we were supposed to think that Matt felt that he had killed someone, which I think just speaks to, I don't know, I'm not such a fan of this should you kill someone debate in superhero movies. Maybe it's because I just know superhero stuff more from the movies, and in my mind it's more like an action movie, and of course you kill people if they're trying to kill you. Like, I feel like as a society we all agree that, like, killing in self-defense is, like, okay. So I don't get too caught up in that sort of debate. And with Daredevil in particular, you have him inflicting such graphic violence on people that for him to be 100% sure that no one he, like, punches in the face and throws down three flights of stairs, that he's sure that they're not going to die, like,
slams heads into doorways, and
so there's a whole bunch of confusion there in terms of his morality. I think,
I mean, specifically, the reason I think that debate does work with Daredevil is because, like, the character's sort of tension is between what's legal and what's morally right. And I think, like, if Captain America started worrying about killing people, you'd be like, well, weren't you a soldier?
Yeah, yeah.
But in the case of Daredevil specifically, like, he's already breaking the law to a point, but his religion and ethics tell him don't kill someone. So kind of, I like them dramatising that internal conflict.
I do. I like the idea of that dilemma in Daredevil. And especially if you're going to introduce characters like Elektra and the Punisher into the season. It did just seem strange to me, like you said, Caroline, that the show, when that is kind of like the central debate of it, for it to end on such an ambiguous note, and as well to end on something. I mean, because I like Daredevil. I've enjoyed both seasons of the show. But on both occasions now, I have found that the last kind of 2 or 3 hours of it have just fizzled out to the point that I'm like, this needs to end now. And this was, it was, I was so bored of what was going on with the Punisher and the Blacksmith. I was so confused by what was going on by Elektra and Black Sky. And then the fight scene at the end, similar to season one, the fight scene at the end was so disappointing in comparison to so many other fight scenes in the show. Like, that final showdown with Nobu is perhaps the third best fight that Daredevil and Nobu have had in the course of Daredevil. And, you know, we had the Punisher corridor fight, we had the Daredevil corridor fight in the corridor at the start of this season and down the stairwell and all that stuff. And this just for me felt like 2 years in a row where the show had fizzled out. And I mean, Caroline, I was reading your review on the AV Club, and you've got all of these questions, unanswered questions from the end of the series. And it does become rather comical when you get down towards the end of that list. And like, there's one of them, like, what's in that big hole in the ground under one of the buildings that is a cliffhanger at, like, the end of episode 8. And we never go back to it, and we never find out what it is. And what's Black Sky? I mean, I've got no idea what Black Sky is or why I should be concerned about it. Elektra ends up in that big coffin urn thing. Now, I thought someone was already in it, so what were they protecting prior to that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting with these binging shows in particular, because I think maybe with a regular TV show that airs week to week, I'm a little more forgiving of, like, cliffhangers and things not resolved, because you're just, you know, you're watching them over the course of, like, 4 months and you just sort of forget. But I think with binge watching in particular, like, what I want from it is to feel like I just watched a complete narrative, like, almost like I watched a 13-hour movie, and that even if some things are open-ended, that, like, those narratives are are reaching some sort of conclusion point. And this show, like, really didn't give that, you know, it kind of just like, it felt like it was going that way. And at the end, it was just like, oh, and everything's open-ended for maybe Defenders or maybe the next season of Daredevil and that. Like, when you spend so much time, like, binge-watching it, you're like, no, what? I just remember what happened a couple episodes ago. So I think those questions linger. And maybe they didn't quite consider that they were, you know, releasing it in this binge model.
Yeah, I think particularly egregious is the Black Sky stuff. I mean, because James and I and Seb, we were discussing Agent Carter on the bonus episode earlier in the week, and on that episode that we were talking about Zero Matter as this kind of MacGuffin that runs through that show, and it's never that interesting, and the plot surrounding it doesn't ever really matter, but at least I knew what it was and what it did and vaguely what the stakes were. Black Sky doesn't have any of that, despite the fact that it was introduced a season earlier. And if anything, its introduction, or the introduction of saying Elektra is Black Sky, seemed to me to just remove agency from a character who, up to that point, I had found really compelling. And suddenly she was a MacGuffin, and suddenly she was acting out of character because someone had told her she was a thing that we didn't know what that was.
With Punisher, I started out sort of tentative on him, and then I grew to, like, really adore him and really adore Jon Bernthal's performance. And with Elektra, I started out, like, super into her. Her first two episodes,
yes,
are, like, I think those are actually my very favorite episodes of the season. And then I thought she,
the flashback stuff was great. As well.
But then I thought her character kind of fell apart, not just with the Black Sky stuff. I don't know. I really hated episode 7, I think it was, the one where she ends up, or no, episode 8, the one where she ends up, she's like trying to be good, and we learn more about her background with Stick and how he maybe sent her to, like, seduce Matt. And that's the one where she ends up slitting the guy's throat at the end. Other people seem to like that episode, so I can't decide if I just had a weird reaction to it, but I thought she was so out of character, and they sort of made her this, like, insane woman. Like, I don't know. It didn't fit with her, with my understanding of how she viewed killing. Like, it felt like she had a mental breakdown, and then that sort of went away for a little bit, and then I feel like it sort of came back with the Black Sky stuff, which I agree with you. Like, we the audience didn't know what Black Sky was, so to watch the characters have an emotional reaction to it when they didn't know what it was.
They don't seem to know what it is either.
Matt had never heard about it till a few episodes before. So then it was like, why is everyone reacting to this? Like, to me, you just said some words that are meaningless. Like, I feel like Matt should react that way. Like, oh, what does that mean? Not like, Elektra, no, don't believe them. Like, I don't know. Maybe she is the Black Sky. Maybe that's a good thing. I just wanted wanted them to ask the questions that I had, because I felt like Matt and I were in the same, like, place in terms of how much we knew about this. So it's like, great, he can be my in to learn about this. But instead, he just had, like, a very intense emotional reaction to it, and I found that very confusing.
I mean, it doesn't help that it seems to contradict the previous series as well, because, like, they had that one episode with Stick where he goes and finds that kid and kills him off screen because he's the Black Sky. And so, is there more than one? Can they have lots of them? If that's the case, does it really matter if Elektra's won or not? Like,
yeah,
just it raised more questions than it answered.
And the fact that it meant that the final arc of the series was going to be all of the hand stuff. Like, James, I know you were saying kind of like, that's part and parcel with Daredevil. You're going to get ninjas and you're going to get the hand. But for me, I was like, well, I mean, these are ninjas and they're supposed to be, you know, like, the most formidable foes that Matt can face. And yet, he's taking down, like, 10 in a minute, you know, in, like, almost double the time that he was taking down just generic street thugs in the first season. Or even, like, they don't seem like a legitimate threat, and they, for me, just made the fight scenes more boring. Like, the ninjas in this for me were as boring as, you know, the Ultron robots at the end of Age of Ultron. It's just like something else to throw at your hero and for him to get through. But I mean, could you get any more excited by the ninja-y handy stuff in this?
I mean, but, like, The thing is, that's an accurate depiction of how they are in the comics. Like, they're just fodder. Like, Wolverine fights them, Daredevil fights them, and they just turn up and get mowed down. And, like, you'll get maybe, like, 10 of them in one panel fighting the hero and just being sliced apart. And so, you know, I appreciate...
just as unsatisfactory in the comics as it is.
I appreciate that it is borderline nonsense, but that's kind of what I enjoyed.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I feel like they did sort of explain it, like, when he takes the mask off and it's just that sort of kid underneath. And it's like, okay, they're recruiting kids and they're not very experienced. And at the same time, if they die, they come back to life, so there's not much self-preservation instinct, but yeah. It's not
do
ideal.
They all come back to life?
They all, in the comics, they just basically turn to dust, and then the accepted feeling is they come back.
Okay.
Yeah, it's not like a special case.
Why is it a big... So is it a big deal bringing Elektra back to life even then? Because that's what frustrated me most about the ending with Elektra, was that it seemed to be setting her up as a villain who would be inextricably linked to the Hand from there on. And all of the interesting stuff with Elektra to me seemed to be her relationship with Matt and the way that those two actors kind of fizzled with each other on the screen. And I'm just not sure. Like, I would love to see more of Elodie Young as Elektra, but I'm not particularly sure I want to see more Elodie Young as Elektra as a villain who is leading the Hand.
Maybe it'll actually help, because I think the problem with the Hand is that they're like not personal or grounded in anything, which is what I really responded to with the Punisher and Elektra, is like they were individuals. I understood their stories for the most part. I understood their relationships to the characters, whereas the Hand is like a massive army, maybe like I couldn't quite get a sense of the scale. Like, I feel like there's a war that's been going on for centuries. There's a massive army. The ninjas are just, like you said, like just fodder for just killing them. But maybe if it's more personal and it feels slightly more smaller scale, it could be stronger. So maybe Elektra would provide that. Like, I'm not super optimistic in what I'm saying, but maybe there's a way that the show could sort of course correct it in season 3.
Yeah, well, I think we're probably going to get the Defenders first.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe if Elektra is leading the Hand in the Defenders, right, and then there is a reversion back to something different in a Daredevil season 3 in the future. Because I don't know. It seems like your two main options for the Defenders, because I think it probably is going to be more Daredevil-centric than any of the others, would be Kingpin or the Hand. And the Hand, being a little bit more mystical, might seem to fit more in with Iron Fist as well, and just as a bigger threat when you've got four heroes to team up rather than one. So, I don't know. Maybe that's where we see Elektra next.
I have no idea what the Defenders is going to be. That it's very confusing to me. Just imagining this.
I do kind of think Marvel isn't that sure either, because it seems like they're really rushing the last couple of Netflix series out at the moment. Like, Defenders as well specifically had to be out in 2017, didn't it? So they've sort of
had to squeeze
the last two in.
I think they always had their plan in place. It seems to me, I don't get that sense, because they've filmed Luke Cage, that's coming out in September. They're currently filming Iron Fist, that'll be out next year, and then we'll get Jessica Jones season 2 leading straight into the Defenders. Those are the two they're apparently filming back to back. So it feels like almost if they were rushing things, or if there was any squeeze, that they could just hold Jessica Jones back until the Defenders, but they're choosing not to do that.
What I mean is, it's more like they want to do another Daredevil season, but they can't, so they're maybe going to try and weave those plot lines into Defenders. Because like, there's going to be no Daredevil next year. Are we going to have to wait until 2018 to see what Karen thinks of being Daredevil? Like, you know.
It'll be interesting to see whose supporting characters wind up in Defenders. Like, whether they're all in it, like... all of Jessica Jones's friends and all of Matt's friends and all of Luke Cage's friends, or if it's sort of like, oh, it's Matt and his friends with cameos from the other Defenders. I also don't believe that Iron Fist is happening. Like, I know that they cast it and they're filming it, but I really don't believe that that's happening. But I do think that Luke Cage, I actually feel very confident that it's going to be the best one yet. So that one I feel good about, but Iron Fist, I hadn't actually
seen the trailer for Luke Cage. I know it's not a trailer, it's only like a 20-second clip. But when I was rewatching the end of Daredevil season 2 just before we were recording this, just to give myself a little refresher of that terrible, terrible Karen Page Pulitzer Prize winning piece of work that she reads out at the end. And the Luke Cage trailer rolled on, and I was just like, oh man, I forgot how excited I was for that show and for that guy and that performance. Like, I'm at this stage, I think Luke Cage is the Marvel TV show I'm looking forward to more than any other. And I include like future seasons of the shows I already like there, because I'm so on board with that character. And I love the title treatment of Luke Cage. even the title treatment kind of like slamming down into itself was really cool. I don't know. I'm imagining that the four Defenders and Rosario Dawson have to be the only dead certs there. Because even Punisher and Elektra and Kingpin, you wouldn't be sure about. And I don't know, maybe Trish maybe they each get one friend that they can bring along. You each get one plus one.
But then
one.
Does Matt just bring one. Foggy or Karen?
Neither. I like them as characters. It's just they don't have much to do over the course of a 13-hour series, let alone like a 6-hour series where there are four main characters instead of one. what did you think of the stuff going on in the background here? Because it was just, for me, like James, I think you as well, we were kind of on the defend Foggy train from the first season, because a lot of people don't like him. And I just wanted them to give those two characters something to do, or something interesting to do. And Foggy seems to just continue whining and moralizing at Matt. And Karen kind of gets teamed up with the Punisher, but it's all tied into her burgeoning journalism career, which for me might have been, in even with the Black Sky and Blacksmith of it all, the most ridiculous subplot of the series.
I do. To be fair, like, I feel like that's a valid extension of the character. Like, there's nothing with any precedent from the comics, like, in terms of adaptation, but it, given what she's been doing in the first season and in the start of this one, like, that, you know, it seems like
murdering,
a fair...
aiding and abetting murderers.
it seems like a fair place for the character to go if there's no law firm to work at. And as for Foggy, like, I think for a start, you need him just because he's the comic relief, but also he's the guy who says to Matt what the audience would say to him, like, why are you being insane? So I like him in that capacity as well.
Yeah,
like that, that scene where he chews him out, sort of, and they both storm off, and yeah, where are they? They're in the courthouse in the men's toilets, maybe.
Yeah,
like that scene was one of my favourites of the series, just because I like the tension between those characters.
Hmm. Yeah, I like them both. I agree that Foggy doesn't get a ton to do, which honestly is okay with me. I agree that he kind of works well in little bursts, but I actually thought this season was pretty good for Karen. And I agree that her little journalism thing at the end is so bad that it sort of makes you forget everything that's come before it. But I actually think that she got some pretty good stuff. I was really into her relationship with the Punisher. I thought that was really complex. And one of the things that I really liked about the Punisher is I thought he was very fatherly. Like, that more than anything was sort of his defining factor. He talks a lot about his kids dying, and I just feel like he just, like, handles things like a dad. And so he had this really interesting, like, they could have gone with the Karen Frank thing being romantic, but I thought they went with it being paternal, which was really interesting. And he gives her, like, a lot of dad advice about, like, dating. And I thought that was great. And I can't say that the Karen Matt relationship was something I was, like, pushing for at all, but I enjoyed how it was done. I thought they did it well without sort of reducing her to just being a love interest. Like, she still felt like her own independent character. I thought they had fine chemistry. Yeah. And I like that I was actually impressed, or maybe surprised, or maybe this was bad, that the show, it never I feel like it was very much about the fact that she killed someone last season, but it never said that. Mm. And I actually wonder if there's people that maybe don't really remember the first season so well that kind of forgot that. But I think that there's this...
It took me a while to remember it. And I was like, oh, that's what all this is about. It's not just... Because I was wondering for a while whether we were just alluding to, you know, the kind of the untold things of Karen Page's past.
Oh, yeah.
which... I kept assuming that was going to be woven into the Punisher stuff, but they're obviously holding that stuff back for some future reveal. But yeah, it took me a while to remember that, but when I did remember, it did help things fall into place a little bit.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they didn't make it more explicit, because I think when you're reading that into her character, it's really interesting, because every time she's like defending the Punisher, she's essentially defending herself. But I agree that like if you don't, like, rightly, if you don't remember that random plot point from season one, I feel like a lot of her arc sort of gets lost.
I wonder sometimes whether this is a show that, as well as being made to be binged for a season to be binged, that Netflix also have in mind that in 5-10 years' time, there are going to be 3 or 4 seasons of this to be binged in a row. Like, you know, the way that you'll just pick up a DVD box set and burn your way through it. But most of those, you know, like when I'm binge watching The Sopranos over the course of about 2 or 3 months, they were made to be showed episode by episode. But these are seasons that I imagine, I mean, you could probably just watch all of season one and roll straight into season two and feel like it's part of the same continuous story, even though there is the kind of shift in pace at the very least, because in the first 4 episodes of this, wow. It was absolutely burning through stuff, and I was like, well, "Season one by 4 episodes in, I don't know. I don't think we'd even met the Kingpin at that point." Same with Jessica Jones. Jessica Jones had that same ponderous pace, and this was going. I don't know. Half of New York's criminals had been wiped out, and the Punisher's arc had already started and ended, and we were, and Elektra had arrived, and I was like, "Wow, okay." I quite liked the way that they went a bit more hell for leather in this one, though, because there was a lot more stuff to fit in. Although, weirdly, not one overarching villain. Because Punisher's there at the start, and there is no mention of the Hand, and then Elektra's there, and there's kind of like the... originally, it seems like Roxxon is going to be the thing that they're investigating and getting to the bottom of, and then Stick turns up, and then Nobu turns back up, and the Hand... But really, there is no one clear villain, which is definitely in sharp contrast to the first season, which, especially in the back half, could have been called Kingpin rather than Daredevil. And I wonder how successful you guys thought that was, because I thought it was interesting not to have one main villain, because I know a lot of people were expecting Bullseye to show up but before the end, because there had been rumours when this second season was being cast up that Jason Statham was being sought for that role. How did you feel it worked without one key villain? Did it still feel like a coherent season, even though it didn't have that one key threat running the whole way through?
I liked it.
I mean,
go ahead, James.
Yeah, I was fine with it as well. Like, I sort of feel like Matt's struggle with himself was enough of a sort of compelling story. Like, particularly the plot thread of... Does he throw away his personal life to become Daredevil basically full time?
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And
which he basically
like,
does.
Well, yeah, that's what I liked, that they got to the end and the story was, this is what it takes to make Matt give up being Matt Murdock.
Hmm.
And like, for me, that's enough of a... That's a strong enough arc that you don't need him to necessarily be fighting the same guy for 12, 13 episodes.
It is interesting, isn't it? Because I remember in the first season we were talking about how we wanted to see more of him lawyering and we wanted to see more of the kind of duality of Matt Murdock and Daredevil. Whereas this second season does just show him kind of getting more and more addicted and not being able to take a night off and just sabotaging his professional life, his personal relationships, and basically everything other than his life as Daredevil. And I think Elektra works really well in that middle third of the series to draw him deeper and deeper into that. I really liked the scene in the stairwell at the just before the final fight in the 13th episode. It's the one moment of that finale that really works, when the two of them just pause and go, hey, we're both probably going to die, but if we don't, should we just run away? Like, he is addicted to becoming Daredevil, but he's even more addicted to her, in a way. I thought it was a fantastic little pause in an otherwise not great finale.
Yeah, I thought so too, and I hadn't actually thought about this before James said that, but I feel like the season, it was a lot of characters that, like, reflected Matt or, like, were potential versions of him. Like, the Punisher's one and Elektra's one and even, like, Foggy, the legal whiz that he becomes is one. And maybe Karen, because she's going through this whole murderer thing, too, even though Matt doesn't really know that. But there's sort of, I think you're right that the season is really about sort of analyzing the character as a whole. I thought from just, like, a pure watching point of view, I really liked the little mini arcs, because it was, I think when you're binge watching something, it can get a little, you're like in the weeds or it feels repetitive. Yeah. And this was like, okay, we got one little thing done and I got the benefits of binge watching, but I also, it still feels episodic. It doesn't, as much as it, I want it to feel like a 13-hour movie, I also like don't, because that would be terrible to just watch a 13-hour movie. So I liked the little arcs. I think because it doesn't stick the landing, it's easier to sort of be like, oh, well, that didn't work. But I think until I got to those last two episodes, I really felt the structure was working. And then, like, it's disappointing that they didn't pull it all together in the end. But I think while I was watching it, I probably enjoyed this structure more than I did the first season.
Yeah. I just think maybe what they chose for that third arc didn't completely work. Maybe if, I don't know, what if Punisher and Elektra had have come face to face at some point, and that had have, you know, that would have pulled those two narratives towards each other, and that would have been the clash towards the end. And Matt getting kind of caught in the middle of that, rather than all of the hand stuff that didn't make sense. I don't know. I also just wanted more, when Punisher was becoming more and more interesting in as a person in that back half, I wanted more than him to find out the guy who was responsible, when it really felt like he'd already kind of got all the people that were responsible anyway. I didn't really understand what the blacksmith was separate, or why it mattered. Why it mattered as an audience member who he was going to have to kill right at the end.
The logistics of the Punisher backstory were nonsense. Like, I didn't like them. It didn't make sense to me how his desire to have someone individual to blame for this, like, what was essentially a random act of violence. Like, I get that that's kind of, like, the character's a little unhinged, but it felt like we didn't need all of these conspiracy theories and stories. And I like the idea that, I feel like that's kind of the decision Frank comes to too. He's like, whatever, I'm tired of dealing with this. I'm going to kill this one person and in my head say that I'm done. And I kind of like that, but I don't like that. I feel like the show is hinting at, like, Blacksmith will become relevant again, because I don't want to watch that.
Oh, I hope not. I hope Punisher just goes off and does has some completely new, different adventures in his own story. It has nothing to do with any of this.
It is a bit like the sort of Batman thing of he can't stop the people who killed his parents because then he doesn't need to be Batman anymore. Like, once Punisher's killed the blacksmith, like, his job is done, surely, and it kind of feels like where's the next step for the character? And that's something that interests me for his solo series, is his kind of crusade is so personal in this that how do they set it up for a sequel that is just Frank Castle shooting criminals because that's his calling now? Like, otherwise it's going to be a retread. Like, it's hard to say.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm interested to see what that series will be. I would have no idea. James, you said that. So he finds the thing that he finds at the end. It says micro on it. That's a comics relevant thing, right?
Yeah. So in the comics, he had a kind of sidekick type. It was sort of a weapons manufacturer. He drove the Punisher's battle van, and it was a guy called Microchip.
Oh.
That's, you know, he turned up in the early 90s, so that's why, back when microchips were cool.
That
CD is presumably something related to that. I'm not sure, like, what's on that CD. Like, is it Micro's address? Like, who knows?
Maybe Micro is like a program now. It's not.
It's like
person.
Jarvis.
What, like Jarvis? Yeah.
I would love to. I would love the Punisher going around with a little voice in his head.
He could use one.
He definitely.
I did love the moment where I think the guy's name was Ray, the guy that turns out to be the like mastermind of all this, and he's sort of monologuing, and Punisher just shoots him in the head. I was like, oh yeah, okay. I appreciate this character in that moment. Like, it was a great. Like, very subversive thing. Like, nope, I'm just going to kill you. I don't want to hear this. That was when... Because I don't think Punisher on the page is a character I feel like I would love, but that was the moment where I was like, this show's done a good job of selling me on him because I really enjoyed that.
And he really does fit into the ultra-violent world that the first season of Daredevil established, because I guess if you're going to do Punisher, you might as well go for it. And those first four episodes are so bloody and violent. Like, even in comparison to the first season of Daredevil, I mean, that when he's getting tortured by Tony Curran and then pulls out the razor blade and shoots him in the face, and that is just wow. you would see Punisher and by the end of that opening four episodes, his face is in pieces. And when he shows up in court, his face is still kind of swollen up and you can barely see one eye. And it starts to go down a little bit and down a little bit. And then he goes back into prison and has that corridor fight. And suddenly you're like, oh, Jesus Christ, they've gone even further. With him in that white jumpsuit, which turns to red. And you get kind of the skull motif there as well. You wouldn't want to watch Daredevil if you're feeling a little bit unwell. I think it could definitely tip you over the edge.
I did. I remember in episode 12 when the two members of the Chase are just sitting in the car and they just both get like shot in the heart. And I remember like having a real moment of, I'm really feeling my mortality in this series. Like, I just, this overwhelming sense of, like, the horror of death came over me. Just from all the murders I'd witnessed.
That was the lecture that time, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Who is just as murderous.
It's a weird thing that the show wants you to really think about death in a realistic way and be like, wow, this is, like, such a big decision, whether you're going to kill someone and look at how much destruction it could cause. And at the same time, you're also supposed to be like, that was so cool when he killed those people. And it's a weird, like, cognitive dissonance. Because it's like, and I think that the hallway fight in the prison, that might be my favorite action scene of the season. I think that they tried a little too hard to recreate the season one hallway fight in that building where Matt was, like, going up and down the stairs. But I think that the prison one was better because it was, like, felt like a new twist on it. But that was, I think that probably did the best balance of being like, this is horrific, but also beautiful. Other times I feel like the balance like got away from the show and they didn't quite know what they were doing as well. But I thought that hallway fight was like, It was so scary. Anytime that they would make you feel really sympathetic for Frank, and then the next scene he would be like murdering people. It was a great like challenge to me as a viewer to be like, oh yeah, this guy is scary. So I thought that fight was just great.
Well, that seems like a good point to segue into what I think, if anyone has ever heard me talk about Daredevil before, was my favourite part of the series. When the Punisher enters the jail and is walking down the corridors and is walking further and further and we're building towards something, I was like, is it? Is it happen? And I literally stood up and punched the air at the end of that episode when Wilson Fisk was revealed, because I was like, yes, he is here. And honestly, every second that guy is on screen, I think that performance is phenomenal. I love that, like, he goes toe-to-toe physically with the Punisher, that he, when he's with Matt at the desk, and he slams his head to the table, and like, that's not Matt going, oh, I have to hide the fact that I'm Daredevil, I can't escape. He is incapacitated by the Kingpin at that moment. And as far as I'm concerned, Wilson Fisk is the best Marvel villain, full stop. Like, you can take your Lokis and your Purple Men, and I don't know, that might be it.
And Malekith? What was his name?
definitely.
Most iconic villain.
Yeah, maybe we can throw Zemo in there now. But Fisk is something else. I love that character, I love that performance, and every second he was on screen during this season was they were my favourite scenes, all of them. Even when I didn't understand what was going on with him and the Punisher and what he wanted. I guess he kind of wanted him out on the street to take out his competition before he gets out there, but the fact that he wanted to kill him in the middle of that as well didn't make an awful lot of sense. But are you guys as enthusiastic as me, as a little bit enthusiastic? Because Fisk is the next, he's going to come out of jail, he's going to find out that Matt is Daredevil and shit's going to go down. And that for me is, you've got me sticking around in the Netflix Marvel universe until that happens. I'm so psyched for that.
Yeah, I love him as well. You might love him a little bit more than I do, but I think that probably just speaks to your insane amount of love. I was so glad I wasn't spoiled on this. They were really smart in not sending out the episode where he appears to critics, so people couldn't put that in their advanced reviews. Yeah. But I was so shocked. I had just kind of assumed he wasn't going to show up, and it was such a great surprise. And I thought it came at a really good point to sort of, I think when I was just watching the start of the season, it's easy to be like, oh yeah, Punisher's like Fisk. They're both really violent people. And you just sort of remember that. And then when you actually see them together, you're like, wow, these characters could not be more different. And that Frank is so much sort of about instinct, and that Fisk is like so careful in how he plans everything. And we get that great like 10-minute opening montage where we like catch up on what he's been doing in jail, and we see how
I wanted that to be the whole episode.
Yeah, I kind of did
really
too.
Wanted it to be the whole episode.
Like, that was so great, and just seeing them together was such a great contrast that really sort of put Frank in a better context for me. So I thought it was really cool from his point of view, and I feel like I said everything. Now I've just listed like 12 things that I've said are my favorite, but I really did love the Fisk-Matt confrontation as well. Like, it was a good moment for Matt to be a little bit arrogant and be like, oh, I can handle this, and to remind us of how powerful Fisk is, and to maybe set up an idea that, like, I read it as Fisk picks up on the fact that there's more going on with Matt than meets the eye, and so that will presumably lead him to an investigation that I'm assuming will lead him to discover Matt is Daredevil. So it's sort of setting stuff up, but it doesn't just feel like it's setting stuff up. And yeah, I thought it was phenomenal. It was just such a surprise how he was used and when he was used. And I like that the season kept me on my toes, because I don't know if I expected it to do that.
And it for me, it rewarded season one stuff as well when Matt mentioned Vanessa.
Yeah.
I mean, it did make me, I think personally, I preferred the first season as a whole. I loved some of the scenes here, which were just, and some of the on-running stories, which were just the relationship with Matt and Frank and Matt and Elektra, and, you know, a lot of the individual stuff going through all of that. But for me, the presence of Vincent D'Onofrio just reminded me of how much I loved his arc throughout the first season. And probably just put this a little bit of a notch below, but made me already assuming that Daredevil Season 3 is going to be better than both of them, because hopefully it's going to be doing some born-again-y inspired stuff. James, you think they're going to go down a different route, don't you?
Well, I mean, it's definitely going to be influenced by Born Again. I wonder if they'll combine it with Out, which is the Bendis story where everyone discovers he's Daredevil. Because that's for me, that's a sort of more interesting take on the character, is to turn him into this sort of urban legend, the lawyer who is also a superhero. And that, for me, that's a more interesting status quo than, like, the Kingpin takes Matt's life apart and then he puts it back together. But yeah. I mean, you know, there's plenty to cherry pick from with those characters. So just any reason to see them engaged in a sort of battle of wits is going to please me.
Battle of wits, physical. But that's what I love the most about Fisk, I think, is that as well as seeming like this, you know, such a careful planner, is that you can see him face off against Frank Castle and make the Punisher look small. Like, the way they shoot Vincent D'Onofrio is fantastic. Because he is a big, round guy, but also a guy who believably is breaking the Punisher's nose.
Like, for me, it was that moment where he is talking to Matt and he just sort of explodes in a sort of violent rage. And, like, it's only then that you realise, like, he's got the whole prison sort of locked down. Because, like, there's no one to stop him and Matt's trapped, you know, literally in the room with him.
It's a great moment where you were like, oh, Matt's in control. And you're like, oh, no, this is going really bad. And like, I felt panicked for it, even though, I mean, I guess I knew he wasn't going to die, but it does such a good job of making you as the audience, like, put you in Matt's shoes, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just thought everything with him was fantastic. And for me, that is the strength of Daredevil 2 seasons in, is it is in the characters, and Marvel has a way of doing this. It's why maybe a movie like Thor: The Dark World is absolute nonsense and no one really looks back at it fondly. But when you rewatch it, it's not torture because you've got those well-established characters that you like having really good individual moments. Even in the worst Marvel stuff, you've got Thor having a scene with Loki. And, you know, even in that, you know, Iron Man 2, you've got great stuff going on with Robert Downey Jr. doing his thing and Gwyneth Paltrow and Justin Hammer and all that kind of stuff. And for me, Daredevil has got almost all of its key characters very, very right. Like, I want to see more of Punisher, I want to see more of Elektra, I want to delve into Karen's backstory. I want to see another season of Daredevil where Matt is even more in focus than he is here, because he kind of has to share proceedings with the Punisher and Elektra and all that stuff. And I still feel like there are more depths and more facets of that character to see, and they keep getting that stuff right, and they keep getting the characters interacting with each other right, in that the scenes are compelling, and that the ideological stuff and the, like you were saying, Caroline, the mirrors of the different characters against each other, all that stuff is compelling and interesting, and it's what gets you through 13 hours of TV when in the middle of that you're going, what's Black Sky, what's the blacksmith, and actually what am I hoping happens by the end of this season? It's that that drives you forward, and that for me is what, you know, what really works about all of the Netflix stuff, not just Daredevil.
Yeah, comparing season one to season two, this is something I made in my reviews, maybe it's controversial, but I think season one is like the Batman Begins, in that it does a really good job of focusing on Matt in particular, and that is something I really appreciate about both Daredevil season one and Batman Begins. And then season two is kind of like the Dark Knight, in that maybe it's objectively better from, like we talked about, like a structural point of view. There's a lot more stuff going on. Maybe it's even more thematically rich, but I think it arguably too much is going on, which is something I feel about, especially like the end of The Dark Knight. It's like, oh, now we have this whole other thing shoved in here at the end with Two-Face, which is kind of how I feel about the hand stuff here. And then I think it loses a little bit of the focus on Matt, even though I was saying there he is sort of reflected in the other characters. I think he is an individual. Just because there's more going on, he just gets a little lost. And I think that's why I end up preferring the first season to the second, even if I think maybe the second is, like, objectively a little bit, I don't want to say better constructed, but it's certainly more surprising, and I like the little, the structural choices they make. But I think the first season, it was just dealing with themes that were a little bit more interesting to me. I think it was about a little bit more about Hell's Kitchen in general, more about the sort of Matt's working class background and his relationship to his father, which I loved. And then really about his Catholicism, which was one of the things that made me love that first season so much. And I think, I don't really mean this as a critique, but I think that those things get dropped in season two in place of like the, more about Matt's romantic relationships, the like the vigilante stuff that we talked about, like, will I kill, will I not kill? And then his legal career, which I think is something the first season didn't do. So it's like a trade-off in what it's exploring. And I just happened to like the first season's like what it was exploring a little bit more.
Yeah, for me as well, the first season felt a little bit more grounded in reality and the and a few more shades of gray in that you had the central thing of it was this real estate guy trying to exploit a shattered area of New York. Going up against a guy who was trying to protect the people who lived there. It felt there was a lot more going and, you know, checking out with the actual residents who lived there. You had a bit more of that with Rosario Dawson. This season felt a little bit more about superheroes and how they relate to other superheroes and then ninjas. which didn't feel quite as grounded for me. And I know that's a silly word to use in relation to superhero stuff and Marvel stuff anytime, but relatively less grounded. I know that's the kind of stuff that I probably say, and I can just imagine James in front of his microphone shaking his head going, what are you on about, Joe?
No, I mean, like, it's all the Marvel universe, isn't it? Like, you can do the grounded stuff and you can do the crazy stuff, and I feel like the crazy stuff is what I enjoy, so I'm a bit more on the side of season two, even though I think season one was better constructed and more like thematically rounded, but all my favourite stuff about Daredevil was in the second season, so.
Right. I also thought it was, I mean, I could actually make a parallel with this from Matt Murdock in Daredevil Season 2 to Steve Rogers in Captain America Civil War. And my complaint with Steve Rogers in Captain America Civil War was that when he was around, he just always seemed to be fighting. There wasn't enough time to actually, you know, spend the time with him as a man, as a person. Mm-hmm. And I think that was probably a similar thing with Daredevil here, that he was just Daredevil so much that I wanted a little bit more Matt Murdock. And I think that's maybe why I'd really like to see something Born Again inspired from a Daredevil season 3, in that if you tore down Matt Murdock, you would really get that introspection of the person and not just of the hero. But I mean, again, this is another thing. A lot of people came and said to us after our Civil War episode, oh, did you, couldn't tell if you liked it. It was like, no, we really liked it. We just thought it was interesting to point out some of the problems. This is still a season of television that I really quite enjoyed. I just a couple of plot things held it back for me. But we barely mentioned Charlie Cox's performance, which I think now it's just a given how good it is. And how compelling he is, despite you rarely seeing much of his face, or even his eyes. You rarely see his eyes, and he gets so much across. And yeah, he is still, for me, central to what works so well about this show.
Really, all the performances. I thought John Bernthal and Elodie Young were, like, the amount that they were able to do with those characters with, like, so relatively little screen time is, like, really impressive. Like, those characters are both, I feel like I have such a strong understanding of who they are, and they're really, like, at times sort of like subverted expectations, like Bernthal being like, he's very calm a lot of the times, which I think is a really cool choice. So I agree that the performances across the board, like, really help elevate things. And of course, like, every time Rosario Dawson's on screen, I just feel like the episode, like, goes up a letter grade, because she's so likable and and I wish she had been in the season more, because she just sort of, like, I think she's a good grounding influence. She just comes in, she's like, you're all crazy. Don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. And she's just so level-headed, and I want her to just sit down with all the characters and talk them through all of their problems.
Well, she's the other reason we're all so excited for Luke Cage, because we know we're going to get more Rosario Dawson there, like more than we got in this season at the very least. And that's going to be fantastic. John Bernthal's performance, it almost seems insane to me that we've got Frank Grillo playing Crossbones in the movies and John Bernthal playing the Punisher on the small screen. It's like, shouldn't that be the other way around? Like, Frank Grillo's fine, but, I mean, Bernthal's fantastic.
Yeah, he's so good.
And that's Crossbones, and this is the Punisher. How have you managed to work things out like that, Marvel?
Well, I mean, it's the same as having Martin Freeman and Benedict Cumberbatch in there. Like, eventually they'll just get everyone. Like, everyone's going to be either in the Marvel Universe or the DC Universe, so...
Yeah, I mean, so the big screen universe now has two Sherlocks and one Watson. We're a Jude Law short of the full set. Okay, well, I think that just about brings things to a close. Have you got anything else that you want to point out? Any other particularly favourite moments or just stuff that you love?
I've got one very quick bit, which is that I like that they finally gave him a proper billy club.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
When the gladiator gave it. I'm disappointed.
We barely mentioned that. The costume has immeasurably improved. And the fact that most of the fighting is going on when it's dark, that they sorted out the mask, which I think was the most crucial aspect of things, that even if the costume isn't exactly what you want it to be, when he's in motion, in action, at the nighttime in Hell's Kitchen, it looks fine. It's not a distraction, which the end of season one kind of looked like it would be.
Yeah. Well, they took off the sparks when he gets hit, which made him look like a Power Ranger. So I'm glad of that. But yeah, the one thing I'm hoping for the Billy Club is that there's a really famous sort of early Daredevil comic where they show you like a pinup of everything that's in his Billy Club. One of the things he's got in there is a micro tape recorder. So I'm hoping that's in there. That's my season 3 wish list, is the micro recorder in the Billy Club.
Can he not just use his iPhone?
He hasn't got an iPhone in the comics. Don't be ridiculous.
Everyone's got a micro recorder in their pocket everywhere they go now, James. Wow. It's probably not essential for him. Caroline, anything that you wanted to point out? Or?
Yeah, I'll just say I really loved episode 5, which was the one that I think is like kind of contrasting Matt and Elektra versus Matt and Karen. And he goes on that little date with her in that beautiful like Indian restaurant that I've been to before. I was really excited to see it. There before.
Awesome.
And you get like the flashback to the boxing ring and the flashback to being in that house where they're going to try to kill the guy that killed Matt's dad. And I thought that, because I agree with you, Joe, that like I think the Matt half of things got a little lost to the Daredevil half of things. But I thought that was a great episode of like putting the focus on Matt and sort of exploring the idea that like Karen brings out the Matt Murdock side and Elektra brings out like the inner Daredevil side of Matt when he's Matt. Like he doesn't even need to be wearing the costume. So I thought that was a really cool sort of interrogation of him as a character and also them as characters. Like they didn't get lost in the shuffle. And I really loved that one shot where I think he like kisses Karen on the stoop and then he walks and the camera like follows him. And then it sort of spins around and you see like all the grittiness of Hell's Kitchen and it sounds like people are yelling and it sounds gross. And it's just like a really cool camera motion to sort of like show that transition from this like bubble he puts himself in when he's with Karen versus like the sort of darkness of Elektra. I just thought that was a really smart and cool episode. And I think that was one of my favorites of the season.
Yeah, I just brought up your review on the AV Club and I was just looking at some of the pictures from that episode to remind me which one that was. And you've got Matt laid down having cheese carved on which, and you've also got a shot of the sex scene with Matt's like hand wrapped around Elektra's neck. And there's something they do a really good job with those two of establishing that kind of that. The raw sexuality in that relationship and the danger and the violence that's inherent in all of that. And you're right, the contrast with Karen, they're kind of walking down the streets holding hand with a peck on the cheek and then we get that stuff there. It is I would say it's never really a love triangle, but But it's always it's a really interesting thing that they explore with the two of them. Again, I kind of feel fumbled right in the finale where, oh, Lecture's dead, I'll go back to camp. Wasn't sure what was going on there. I also did wonder at the end of that episode whether Matt couldn't just order himself like 4 or 5 of those coffins and then just, if he does ever kill anyone accidentally, just bring him back and say, now don't do that again, or I'll kill you for real next time, or I'll set my mate Frank
on get out of jail free card. I think Game of Thrones is having the same problem. I think anytime you come up with an idea that death is not permanent in your world, you just start going, well, why don't you just bring everyone back?
Yeah, I still can't wait to see how the third Star Trek movie deals with the ending of darkness, where death is cured so that we could do a callback to a movie that was released 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Me and James will follow that up on our Star Trek podcast. You would love that, wouldn't you, James?
I would listen. Absolutely. I would be your most, your biggest fan.
Okay, well, it was a great chat about Daredevil Season 2, but I think that brings things to an end this week. So we have got another episode coming later this week. Yeah, three cinematic universes in the space of a week. That's pretty cool. You probably know what that next episode is going to be about, but if you're not sure yet, stick around until the end of this episode, and there'll be a post-credit sting on the end of this one as well, telling you what that episode will be about. But we'll skip the usual boring outro-y stuff. We'll save all that for the for the main episode at the end of the week. But Caroline, thanks for joining us again.
Oh, always. I love coming here.
If you want to hear more of what Caroline thought about Daredevil Season 2, just go and binge read all of her 13 reviews on the AV Club, because they're fantastic. And Patton Oswalt agrees, so that should be a recommendation enough. But James, you and I will be back later in the week. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you later in the week.
Goodbye.
Everything they've built will fall, and from the ashes of their world, we'll build a better one. Cinematic Universe returns in a few days' time with X-Men Apocalypse.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.